tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears.
Welcome, everybody. Let's all get situated. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I asked a friend, Walter, to tell us a joke.
Walter, alcoholic. Okay, what's the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic falling into a hole? The non-alcoholic reaches out his hand and asks for help. The alcoholic stays down there and starts decorating.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jack. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that might make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Everybody ready? It looks like so. All right. So let's start. Want to start after me, the fog light right on the left of me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those who are lost, sick, and dying. There is a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is great news. This book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Zach to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. Please.
What's up, guys? Zach, recovered alcoholic. This is Spiritual Experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes, or religious experiences, must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation.
Can I stay up here for a second, Zach?
I was asked to present a good friend, a teacher of mine, with something very special. This man helped me when I first came down here, when I didn't know what anything was about. I didn't know what life was at all. He 100% brought me to God, helped me have a spiritual experience. I could cold-heartedly say I don't think I would be here today on this earth. It's just an honor to know you and to call you a brother. Congratulations on 5 years.
How'd you do it?
All right. Recovered alcoholic named Zach.
Hi, Zach.
I never thought that I would be up here with 5 years. And I also never thought that I'd be up here talking about God. But without God, sobriety wouldn't be possible for me. I don't want to take away from Marion's time, but all that I can say is that I am trying all the time to grow in a relationship with my God. I work today at giving up selfish attachment to things, and by working at that I mean that I pray for that and I do the footwork. You know, I take the steps and I let God kind of push me along. And you know, without him I wouldn't be able to do any of this stuff. But you know, there's a couple people in this room tonight that know how bad I used to be. Just in character and just in general. And the rest, you just have to take my word for it, but it was pretty bad. But I had to change. I wouldn't have been able to get sobriety or keep sobriety. And that change that took place through working the 12 steps, continuing to work those in my life, chopping wood and carrying water, working with guys like Jack, that's what makes it all worthwhile. You know? And I would not be here today if it wasn't for them and if it wasn't for God. That's all I got.
All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode or meeting mode, or just turn them off. Okay, so for the past 11 or 12 weeks, we've had Marion speaking. It's been a joy hearing her. And let's have her up for one more time.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Love you. Hi. My name is Marianne, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I feel emotional, and I'm trying to breathe. I just feel very moved, you know, that this has been 12 weeks running, and I feel that just the freedom and that I just have felt really free this journey through the steps to be more authentic and be more me than I ever have. And first of all, that goes to my relationship with God, but it also gives thank you for letting me be me. Thank you. And and however that shows up, you know. Tonight I thought, oh, you know, I don't really want to go down Broward. I know the highway's a mess and 95. I'm going to just take the slow cruise down the A1A. Wrongo. And but then it was like, and I always look at that, those opportunities. I can get tight. I can get upset. And there was a couple moments I was when it was, you know, 7:13 and I'm up on Oakland or something. No, I wasn't on Oakland, but I was all the way up there and I'm like, wow, really, God? I'll take a shortcut. I go over to Federal and then I was going to take a left and take a shortcut and that was a dead end. And then I turned around again and I'm like back and I'm like, Mike calls me and I'm like on two wheels. See, we got a parking spot out front. I have no idea if that's even a parking spot out there. But literally, you know, John and Patty saw me come in on two wheels and please forgive me, God. But you know, like, When you have this relationship with God as a result of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it just becomes playful and chatty and fun, you know. It's like I kind of had a peace and took it as prayer time. And often that's just, you know, sometimes my relationship with God and what I do in this fellowship is on two wheels and it's to the, you know, it's all the way, you know. Balls to the wall or whatever you say, you know. And sometimes it's that slow cruise and it's just what resting in, with God and just, you know, soaking it all up. And if you're new to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you warmly. And if you're messed up and selfish and self-centered and dishonest and full of fear and think you're not enough or think you're really the best, you know, welcome to AA, you know. And then you probably didn't, you know, end up here because you were the PTA president and, you know, your husband thought you were the greatest thing since sliced bread at this time. You know, it's just, that's how we end up in these rooms. And I was referring last week to ragamuffins and scallywags, and I was I teach this class, and we were talking about it's the Ragamuffin Gospel, and it's kind of cool because it talks about in our brokenness and in those places that's like God's just there cheering us on, just cheering us on, and sometimes that just overwhelms me. And you know, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous on November 11th, 1989, in Bellingham, Washington, and I walked in the rooms, and there was only one requirement. And I never fit in anywhere my whole entire life. I never felt like I belonged. And I was home. For the first time in my entire life, I listened. I listened. And I learned everything I know about life today, which is not a whole lot. Maybe leave a little earlier sometimes, you know, or whatever that is. You know, women taught me how to dress like a lady. Men taught me how to be treated like a lady. You know, women taught me to, you know, give them your kids a bowl of cereal and pack them that sack lunch and send them off to school. And they taught me to spank them and not smack them, you know, or whatever. And it's not like I did a lot of that anyway. And you can ask my kids, I'll give them your phone, you know, my phone number. And by God's grace and this fellowship, this beautiful fellowship, you know, my kids remember one time of me drinking, and one time, and that's pretty awesome. But I was kind of the closet drinker, you know, at home with them and whatever. So that didn't make it great. But so I was thinking about a lot of things about this 12-step, and I got home a little bit early from work today and took an inventory phone call from a sponsee that ended up being really, really, really beautiful. And, you know, I'm kind of laid out. I got home a little early. I got the doors open and the wind blowing through, and I'm laying across my bed, and I got my book open, and I got my Bible open, and I got, you know, and I'm just having some quiet time with God. And then there were a few interruptions, and they just happened to be 12-step stuff. You know, one was a guy who's been a part of this group for a while, and his parents calling me and him talking to me, and, you know, just hearing the heartbreak in their voices and hearing the desperation in his voice. And you know, there's lots and lots in working with others about our inconveniences. The phone's going to ring, you know, and all these inconveniences we can look at in our life. By the way, I'm going to go speak on step 12. How dare you interrupt me with a 12-step call? You know, I mean, how weird is that, you know, to think of, you know? But I had this really wonderful inventory with a sponsee that we've had some stuff going on, and it was just open and it was real. And one of the things I do with my sponsees is I show them my brokenness. I show them my brokenness. I show them my, you know, this one particular one, I told her, you scare the crap out of me. You know, I got to go to God a lot with you, you know? And that's okay. And when I took it on, it was like kind of like that, you know, when I took this one on, and it ended up at the end of the phone call where there was such vulnerability and there was such transparency and there was such honesty. I just told her, I love you more than I did before this call. I mean, this is cool. You know, this is cool. That's what this is about. And then from that phone call, I went to the parent phone call and this young man that we'd love to see come back. And his honesty and getting him to detox, and he's miles and miles away. So I get off of both of those phone calls back to back, and instead of, oh crap, I better go study for this. Dude, that's study live in action, isn't it? And what I came away from that was with a skip in my step and going, yes, yes. And it's the craziest thing, guys, this alcoholism. It's the craziest thing about what we get in sobriety, what we get when we get recovered, is that this joy and this thrill and this happiness that, man, I get to help be in the life-saving business. I get to help get somebody's hand in the hand of God. I get to do that today. That's ragamuffin gospel stuff, man. You know, it is, you know, and so I felt, you know, I just literally walked away from that second phone call like, wow, God, I feel like I was used by you, and how great that feeling is. And, you know, we can chase money and we can chase cars and casinos and we can chase all these things in life. And I can tell you, in this 58-year-old body with 28 years of experience, the greatest passion of my life is helping a drunk with God. Because see, on left to my own devices, I can run after and I can chase after if somebody's not ready or if somebody is ready. Left of my own devices, I don't have that power to save somebody or change somebody. You know, back in my day when I first got sober, my sponsor took me on 12-step calls. And that's when we did it without treatment centers, and we did it without, and I love treatment centers, trust me. You know, and but I went on some of those calls, and some of those things were pretty darn scary, you know. My first sponsor took me on this call, and there was this girl named Angie, and she was a really extremely tall, pretty well-built biker, and we're going to go get Angie, and I'm like, I don't even know, sober 6 months, not much, and I'm like going into this 12-step call, and never go alone, that's another key, and we walk into her apartment, and she's drinking. By the time the phone call came, she's drinking, she's already drinking. We're in her apartment, and my sponsor is giving me a lead. She goes, I'll lead this. You just, you know, I'll do the talking. You just interrupt every once in a while. You know, just watch me. I'm going to teach you how to do this. And she became violent in that 12-step call. And we were like, oh, crap, we got to get out of here, you know. And I'm like scared. I'm like, I'm scared. And we go to go out the door, and she sticks her big biker boot in front of the door like this. You're not going nowhere. We're like, holy crud. This is a really bad situation. You know, long story short, we got out of there. She decided she wasn't quite done drinking, and we get out of this place, and we're zooming away on two wheels, like how I came in here tonight. And I'm like, man, that sucks. That didn't work. That didn't work. What, you know, what do we do? You know, what help are we? You know, maybe we could have done this, and maybe we could have done this, and maybe we could have done that. And the first line that came out of her mouth was this. Yeah, Marion, are you sober? Yeah. So I'm going to tell you one more of my favorite 12-step stories, and then we'll go on to whatever else. But this was on my heart. And this was one where I went on my own. Not a good idea. Don't do that, folks. But I was safe this time. However, her husband wasn't. So as a woman who I frequented her house, if you know what I mean, for other things other than alcohol, okay? And so she was a girl who watched me, and she would, you know, I worked with her, and she's like, yeah, Marion's one of those AAs. She's one of those AAs, you know? And I'm telling you, sometimes you are the only big book some people see. And I was one of those AAs. You know she hasn't had a drink. You know she doesn't drink. So one day, it's summer. She lives in this. She was a crafty girl. So she had this garage full of, you know, she just made stuff. You know, one of those crafty garage, she shack, whatever they call it, things. So whatever. All right, help me out with this. So I get this call, and Gina's like, I want to quit drinking, Marion. I want to quit drinking. Me and Scott got in a fight last night. And I'm like, all right, I'll come on out. I think I made a couple calls. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. I'd be lying to you if I know. You know, this is 27 years ago. And it's August, and it's Washington, and it's kind of hot out. And I pull up into her driveway, and she's standing there in her underwear. And she's got shoes on, her underwear, and a t-shirt. And she's deciding, you know, she's telling me all about this fight she had with Scott the night before. Yeah, well, I hit him. Oh, you hit him? Yeah, with this frying pan. I kid you not, guys, this is the truth. It was one of those Teflon frying pans. This Teflon frying pan was, like, tweaked, man. It was bent in the middle where she had cracked Scott in the nose with this frying. I mean, you got to hit somebody pretty hard with that thing, right? Long story short, trip to detox years later. I visit her, you know, a couple years later because I, you know, there's stuff going on and I wasn't in contact with her. But what I did was I took that frying pan because I wanted to remind her. And I took that frying pan and I got crafty myself. I put ribbon around all the way around the edges and then I wrote home sweet home on the middle of it. So did you hang that in that kitchen? Remind yourself anytime that you feel like you want to kick Scott's butt again, you know? But it's like that's where her alcoholism took her was, I mean, that's a hard hit, guys. Has anybody else ever done that? I don't know. Oh, you have. Yes. Go, Melissa. Go, Melissa. So not why do we recommend not going alone? Why is one of those things you don't go on a 12-step call alone? One of the things is for our own personal safety. If I'd have been at Angie's by myself, I'd have been in a whole lot of trouble. Was 6 months sober. You know, I was wise enough to, you know, call somebody else possibly with Gina. I don't know whether I got her to detox by herself, what the story was. One for my own personal safety. We don't know what's going to happen when we get them in the car. We don't know what's going to happen with them. But what I do know is that, you know, our big book talks about when in the book and in the chapter of working with others that we are going to be inconvenienced, that our phone is going to ring all these times of the night, all these things that are going to happen. But it also gives us in a vision for you. What is the vision for you when we do work with alcoholics? What is it? What are the things that get to happen for us? So I wanted to go to a few different places in the book. We've shown how we've got out from under. This is out of a vision for you. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there's a substitute. Oh, there's my glasses. See? And it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory, and I'm going to tell you if you're brand new to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find this fellowship, and so will you. Where did I want to go? So here's us after working the 12 steps. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. Respected? Us? Crazy. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, it's happened among us, right? They can happen with you should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience. We're sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. Time and time again, a relapse will happen. Time and time again, you know. And because the book talks about, you know, when we fail to enlarge our spiritual life through work. Okay, here's an alcoholic. Selfish, self-centered, egotistical, dishonest, lying, cheating, stealing, manipulating. So let's switch it over. Should an alcoholic fail to enlarge his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others? He may not be able to handle the low spots and trials that lie ahead. And I can tell you that over and over and over again in my life. Guess what, guys? We're not promising you a bed of roses. We're not saying you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you get to do a happy dance 24/7. It isn't like that. There will be trials. There will be low spots. There will be times when we literally have to grovel on the ground and cry out to God, help me through this one, God. Take me out for another cup of coffee, another piece of freaking pie. You know, let's go to the Floridian again and let's talk this sucker over, you know, and things like that. There will be trials and there will be low spots. But that deal is that that relationship with God, that this daily reprieve is contingent on, you know, more times than a million, those relapses will happen from those trials and low spots that come. See, I don't know when the trial's going to come. I don't know when the low spot's going to come that I can't for certain handle. The day I lost my father, I felt like I was leaving this planet in my head. You know, I literally felt like it was grief beyond my capability to take. At all. And you know, as I was talking to the sponsee today, you know, it's like, you call me with a low spot, 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 and I'm going to point you right back to God. Write your inventory, go to God. Write your inventory, go to God. If you're living in this place of bedevilments, there's two answers to the bedevilments, guys. And what are they? One's going to be a drink because I'm so down. I'm so miserable. I'm so irritable and discontented and full of misery and depression. Or I'm going to go to God. And sometimes that's going to be because Zach's going to say something at the right moment. Or Jess is going to say something. Or Steph or Craig or Lisa or whoever, they're just going to help me in that blow spot. They're going to be there, and the hand of AA is going to reach in and it's going to grab me, and they're going to say the thing that always sets us free. I understand how you feel. How can I help you? That's pretty cool for a bunch of freaking ragamuffins, you know? I often say this to my girls. It's like, and I say this to people, it's like, we've been given this superpower to save lives. You know, Zach talked about it. You know, our sponsees can help us way more than, you know, that stuff that happened this afternoon with sponsees and phone calls and stuff like that. Man, I'm charged up tonight. I'm charged up. That helped me. I mean, it might have helped them. Well, God bless them. That's great. But you know what? It sure helped me. I wasn't in a low spot, but I came here tonight and I'm fired up. I could have, say I didn't go to God before I came here tonight. Say I didn't have those conversations before I got here. Say I went, hit traffic like that and, you know, and I didn't go to the place where my source is. I didn't plug into the source that I call God. I didn't do that. You'd have a different person up here rattling her mouth like she is right now, you know, and through these 12 steps, you know, just that awaken, you know, Zach posted, well, I shouldn't say that. Well, yeah, you did. You posted this thing of this thing that happened, and it was a really beautiful awakened moment that he had in the freaking grocery store, that he, a beautiful story. You know, with that awakened spirit, we can be present in lives, in moments, to go, okay, God, I see that. I just saw Robert. There's Robert. Hi, Robert. And I was in another traffic jam, and I was going down the A1A. Oh, poor me. You know, luxury problem. I live in South Florida, and I'm going down the A1A where people save a lifetime to come visit. And I'm stuck in traffic, A1A. Oh, my God, I took the wrong way. This sucks, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, for about a week, Robert, I was like, where is Robert been? Haven't seen him. Where is he at? You know, and it was, you know, whatever. I hadn't really think of it. And I'm in the traffic jam and this really sucks and blah, blah, blah. And I look to my right and there's Robert. And I rolled down my window and said hey to my buddy. And, you know, it was cool. So you know, there's so much of this stuff that happens in our life when we're of maximum service to God and we say our prayers and we set ourselves up, that we can be at the grocery store and hear a Holocaust survivor talk about forgiveness. Wow. What do we know about forgiveness, guys? I mean, some of us do. We've been through some pretty horrible circumstances. Or, you know, or I can be, you know, driving down the A1A, grouchy for a minute because I'm in a traffic jam and I get to see my buddy Robert, you know, whatever. You know, what's bad isn't necessarily bad and what's good's not necessarily good. And guess what? You know, from that place, I could have been just cussing it out and I could have been driving through that traffic and I could have been on my cell phone or texting when I shouldn't have been and I would have missed the whole moment that I had. So guess what? I didn't have to worry about Robert anymore. And he's sitting here tonight. And that's cool. And so wow. So just being open and present for these miracles that God presents in our life. To witness my friend's beautiful wedding last week and, you know, to be there and to be present for her. It wasn't like, whoa, what am I going to wear to the wedding? Is anybody going to be looking at me? Am I going to be sitting at what table? And what about me? But no, but be able to be there for her and be of service to her, you know, and seeing Melissa kicking butt there. And, you know, all these things that life presents us in sobriety that we get to be awake and alive and a part of, you know, it's amazing. Okay, I'm going to try to find one more thing here. I think, oh. No, I'm going to do this. This is going to be long. Just so you know. This is going to be long. Because it'll probably... This is going to be kind of my closing words. Because I really... Maybe. It's 7:59. We'll see what happens. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams, and it's been in a heart full of gratitude with an air mattress and a guitar all by myself. With a heart full of gratitude. You know the guitar thing, Garrett. It's everything. And I sat at the foot of my dad, and I had my children surrounding me, and I felt their love. One of the most glorious... Okay, what's bad? Not necessarily bad. Not bad. I wouldn't trade that moment for all the world. Oh, I wish he was still here. But it was sacred and it was beautiful. things like that. And that's what I mean about a life beyond my wildest dreams. I got a little, I don't have a lot of stuff. I got a really shiny ring and a really cool guitar and a Subaru that I love. And so, but what I do have is this place in my heart that says, you know, God, I want to, you know, when I put my head on the pillow at night, was I of maximum service to you, God, and to your people? Is there anybody I passed by that I should have reached out to? And you know what? Sometimes that's tiring. We can sit in a diner and there's 20 people at the diner, and sometimes there's 20 people that want to do a fifth step, and you know, sometimes it can be a little tiring. And sometimes we go home and we meaning me and Peter, and you knew that. But, you know, things like that, it can be tiring and it can be taxing and it can be all those things. But you know what? It's like with 28 years of sobriety, and I know I've said that a couple times, but it scares the living daylights out of me. Like, God, why do I get to be here? When you really think about that's really scary stuff. That if you're a drunk like me, man, God's come in between that. And man, that's amazing. That's amazing grace. And if you're an alcoholic that can take any credit for it, then you're not an alcoholic of my variety. You're not. And so go help somebody like Polly says. So I'm going to read this because I think it's really awesome. And Freddie's sponsor, Tom M., read this, his last 12-step series, and this thing just rips me up. It tears me up. Because I want to be the hands and the feet of God today, and I don't want to be on a high horse, and I don't want to be saying, you got to do it my way. I want to be the hands and feet of God. I want to be that big book girl that's walking down the street that says, I want what she's got. You know, but you got to get what you're supposed to get. See, my way might not be your way. And it's taken a, I'm 58, man, and I'm 28 years sober. And that doesn't mean 20, like that's a big deal. But to me, I've been grinding my knees on the carpet for a long time, and I'm not looking for things in the carpet anymore. And that's pretty cool. You know, Mike would have been doing that too. I know that for sure. I'm not doing that anymore. It's like, man, and when you offer yourself to that God to be of maximum service, when we take these steps and we take them into our heart and we build that solid foundation and we do 6 and 7 and it's like, God, get me out of the way. The things that God can do in and through you are pretty freaking amazing. I mean, Mike and I sat in detox one night. It was one of the funnest nights I've ever had. We're sitting there. We bring a guy in and we got a room. We got a party going on in the detox waiting room. We had a party going on. We went to the store to get some junk food and some Gatorade, and we brought it over, and we're sharing it with everyone. And there was these two beautiful... I got to tell this story, too, before I go into this long thing. There's these two ladies there, and they're drunk, drunker than skunks. They're just drunk. They're drunk. One's over on one couch, and she's crying, and another one's over on another couch, and she's crying. And the one drunk lady goes over to the other drunk lady, and they've got their arms around each other, and they're comforting each other. And we were just watching. It was like watching one of the coolest movies you ever saw. Because that's what they say, you know, there's no love like one drunk for another. How many times did you sit next to a drunk at the bar and their sad story, and you play the perfect song on the jukebox? You know, this one makes me really sad. The landslide will bring you down every time, you know, or whatever it is, or, you know, and I'll always love you, or whatever it is, you know, we're just crying in our beer together. Here those two ladies were sitting there comforting each other, and I mean, we had a ball. We had a ball in that detox that night. And we got to get a brother home, and we got to get a brother connected, and we got to be able to get a guy, you know, set up, comfort the family, be in that place. Man, I wouldn't have changed. That was a Saturday night. By golly, I could have been out to dinner and to the movies. But I sat in detox and had just lived high on the hog right there in the detox. And it was amazing. So, there's a segue for you. Just listen to these words, if you would. These are words of one of our founders helped, because we had a lot of help building Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys know that? We had a lot of help. And one of our friends was a man named Sam Shoemaker. And Tom M., when he was up here, he read this at the end of his 12-step talk, and I had never heard it ever. And I sat there and bawled through the whole thing. But I'm going to end with this. So I'm giving Tom credit. It's called I Stand at the Door. Okay. I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It's the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use me going way inside and staying there, when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand at the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find the door to God. The most important thing any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door as starving beggars die on cold nights and cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it. Live because they've not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints. Go in all the way in. Go way down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It's a vast, roomy house, the house where God is. Go into the deep of hidden casements, of withdrawn, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deep look. And sometimes I venture in a little farther, but my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. Oh, there's another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God and the zeal of his house devour them. For God is so very great and asks all of us. And these people fear cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they're spoiled for the old life, that they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do more. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just when they came in to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near that they are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door, but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet even found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deep and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place near enough to God to hear him and to know he's there, but not so far from men as to not hear them and remember that they're there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them. Millions of them. But more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I'm intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I had rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. So it'll always be about a leveling of our pride. It'll always be what Alcoholics Anonymous first taught me. You know, God don't make no junk. I'm no better than anybody in this room, and I'm no less than anybody in this room. And this has been a beautiful journey. And I can't wait for who's next. So thanks, guys. Thank you. Woo! I haven't had a standing ovation since music.
Thank you.
Give it up for her one more time. I'd like to introduce our group secretary for the report.
Hi, my name is Chris, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Frank to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Frank.
Hi, everybody. Frank, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Frank.
Recovered. We are not cured from alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you. <clears throat> 1940s big book style sponsorship. From the forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we have seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I have a show of hands, please, of recovered alcoholics? Excellent. Is anyone in need of a sponsor? All right, awesome, guys. If you could please stand also. Stand up. Yeah. Great, guys. Let's meet with these folks and get them back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting, where the Big Book comes alive. Our fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. This Thursday, actually next week, a week from today, we're not going to be having a meeting in this room, but 2 weeks from today, on Thursday, we are going to start our next step series, and that's going to be Joe B. So we're all very excited, and we're looking forward to Joe B. coming and taking us through the 12 steps for the following 12 weeks, but not next week. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, the Little Red Book, and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday, except for next Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15 p.m., and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Also, does anybody have Fellowship of the Spirit tickets? There's a Fellowship of the Spirit coming, yes? Okay, awesome, right there. Fellowship of the Spirit, June 22nd and 23rd, is going to be at this church, so you can see. What's your name, sir?
Ryan.
You can see Ryan after the meeting. For details on that, so we're really excited. Also, that's there. And there's a Big Book Seminar. Some of these flyers are also on the back table there. 40th Big Book Seminar. So, great. Thanks. See you next week.
Thank you, brother.
We have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study, and those who wish to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. All right, see you all Monday and not Thursday. Godspeed. Hey.
forsaken. I am desperately in need of restoration.
Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope the world smiles.
light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.